Hello and welcome to the fourth Twickenham CC podcast. My name's Dan Huff. I am secretary of the club. Joining me tonight, we have Eugene Berger. Hi, Eugene.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
I'm good. You?
Very wonderful. Thank you.
Good man. Good man. And we also have the one and only Kev Kavir. Kev, all well?
Yeah, good. Not as very wonderful as Huge. That's incredible.
Yeah, would it be hard to be as positive as Huge on that one? All good. We haven't actually chatted for a while, so we've got a fair bit of material that we could cover. I was going to start with the most obvious, and that, of course, is that the league season for the Saturday men's sides has begun. It's been a long wait, as I was always wont to say in the field. You know, it's 30-odd weeks of shopping in the winter, and we're now back very much on league cricket mode. We had two wins and three defeats, I think. Now, you two guys both played for the twos. You were one of the winners. Do you want to talk us through it, fellas? Good day?
Yeah, it was a lovely day. Obviously, I think we won by close to 100 runs, 99 runs. Good team effort. A lot of new faces in the side, which was good. So we got the new recruits had a good run out. What else was there? Probably good to mention Phil Nash's 110 not out off 99 balls. He made it look like a completely different wicket to the rest of us. Obviously, with all the rain last week, the pitch was a little bit up and down. But, it was a good win. Kev, anything to add to that?
No, it's just what you said. I mean, I think any time where you've got one guy scoring more than 50% of our runs, you know, we knew Indian Gym would have a lot of spinners. It was a big toss for them to win and to put us in on a track that was wet. And, yeah, we could easily have folded, but the way he batted, you just got to accept that was just a seriously good knock. Without that, yeah, we could have been having a beer by 2 o'clock.
I think that's interesting, though, because I mean, the toss thing, first of all. Now, one of the things that I always used to have theories about the opposition when I was captain about whether they would bat or bowl first. And with Indian Gym, I always expect them to want to bat second. You know, it can be 50 degrees and a dust bowl, or it can be 5 degrees and, you know, a great big pile of moss. And they will do the same thing time and time again. What would you have done if you'd won the toss, Huge?
I definitely would have bowled. It was a tough wicket to bat on. The interesting thing is obviously it dried out as the day went on. So it got a little bit easier to bat. So, yeah. You know, definitely one of those tosses where I think any side in their right mind would have chosen to bowl first. You know, first game of the season. As a batting side too, you never want to bat first. Main reason behind that is you never know. You cricket can go wrong in the first couple of overs, and you could be, you know, to some degree, as we were what, 4 for 2, two very good balls, got you know, Nux and Ajmal out, and fortunately, you know, Nashi came to the rescue at 4 and batted us out of trouble. So yeah, it was just one of those interesting wickets.
But moving forward, what's your strategy on that? Do you like to chase, or as a captain, is your instinct to get the runs on the board and see what the opposition do?
I like seeing the pitch first, Dan. I'm one of those where you rock up, have a look at the pitch. If it's a nice green seamer, if it looks like it's going to break up, you know, a little bit later. If it's a used wicket, it's obviously going to turn a little bit more in the second innings. Yeah, it just purely depends on what the wicket looks like. So I don't mind chasing. I don't mind setting. It's I think we can win both ways.
Kev, any thoughts on this one? Are you a chaser or are you a setter?
I mean, I've discussed this extensively with Mr. Steve Watts over the years.
I thought you were going to say Steve War then. I thought that would have been a call.
Well, yeah.
Well, they are very similar, Steve Watts and Steve War, to be fair, as individuals.
Yeah. I guess I'm a little bit more kind of simplistic about it. I think you just got to do whatever you do well. I think we don't see a lot of change, especially at the threes level when we're going to. You just got to execute. I think ultimately, I think we'd have won the game either way round. I think we just had a really clear plan. I think we focused really well during the day. I think we'd covered off a few of the ideas that, you know, we knew that, especially teams like Indian Gym that have such a pull of new players from year to year, that there might be some surprises lower down the order, and you don't switch off, and we had them 6 down. And I think that turned out to be true, because you probably argued, and if you had agreed, you'd say that kind of 7, 8 and possibly even 9 turned out to be like their best bats.
Yeah.
and that got us through. I don't put a lot into it. I'd probably lean towards wanting to bat second, but that's not because of tactics, but more just the rules in the league. I think we discussed it, Dan. Obviously, there's no Duckworth-Lewis, so if you're chasing just on run
rate. Well, not for the twos and below. Obviously, there is for the ones, but yeah.
We're just run rate, yeah.
Yeah, so in that situation, obviously, if you're losing overs, getting the same run rate over a short amount of overs is a no-brainer, but that would be the main thing for me.
Mm. Well, I think the run rate issue is one to take note of, because the rules, as they are at the moment, massively favour the side batting second.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah.
Well, I personally, for what it's worth, I was always happy about him first, but that may well be because I just wanted to go out and bat as an opener, get out of the way, you know, go and, you know, bat in the bright sunshine. But I also felt in club cricket that if it was a reasonably warm day, get the opposition out there for 3.5 hours, put 270 on the board, and say best of luck, chaps, because we're club cricketers, you know, they'll be knackered.
Bacon,
absolutely. I mean, there's certain grounds I would always bat first, almost no matter what. Wembley is the first one. Wembley really does change over time. The bounce goes from very low to non-existent. So Wembley was always one to bat first. But there were certain grounds where I just also felt it didn't matter. You know, if it's a good flat track, then it doesn't really matter either way. I'd look more at the weather, actually, than I would look up rather than down. Before the making the call. Nash's knock, as you say, different league, wasn't it, really? I thought he batted superbly.
Yeah, it was like he was betting on the M3 compared to us. It was betting on the Dust Bowl or something that... I mean, it was rather odd, though, that the ball was turning so much because the pitch was a little bit damp.
Yeah.
And it was seeming quite a bit, too. So, you know, there was something in it for everything, but obviously Nashy just outclassed everyone.
Well, for those who are that way inclined, of course, you can go back and watch Nashy's knock. It's still there on Pitch Vision in all its entirety. And I watched a fair bit of it, not just on Pitch Vision, but obviously I went down to watch at the Green as well. And the thing I noticed about it was he absolutely had a method. It might not have been a massively pretty one at times, but he was going to block anything that looked like it might be problematic and whack everything that was either short or full. And I thought that was absolutely the way to go. I was never very good at doing that. But I felt that Nashy got it down to a T, and, you know, take him out of the equation, then you had a pretty even game, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It was an even game, yeah.
Yeah. You're spot on there, Dan. In fact, I think I said that to the guys in the change room afterwards. It was probably one of the first times I've had massively extended, but a reasonable amount of time out in the middle. And actually, the clarity in terms of how he was approaching each bowler, and his plans, where he was going to score, where he wasn't going to, that actual kind of clarity and laser focus was absolutely a learning curve, and that made it, you know, a really good experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the skill to execute the plan the way he did, but yeah, you can see why he got the success he did that day with that mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. Slightly different story with the ones. Obviously, you two were playing, so you won't have seen anything of the ones game over at Bushy Park. Fantastic game of cricket. I spent a couple of hours there watching some of that, and two pretty evenly matched teams. And it was going right down to the wire. We scored 260, I can't quite remember the details. 244, right? And they needed 9 off 9 balls with the last pair at the crease. And then a bombshell dropped, and we were deducted 6 runs, or 6 runs were added to Teddington's score because of a slow over rate. Reasonably controversial, first time that I think this has been applied to us anyway. And of course, Teddington managed to scramble the 3 runs and won the game. Thoughts on this, guys? Is this the way to penalise slow over rates? Should we be doing other things? Or is this just, you know, tough turkey? Got to suck it up, bowl your overs a bit quicker. What do you make of it?
Let Kev go first on this one. Oh,
thank you. You jumped back straight on the fence. Yeah. Look, I can't profess to know the ones rules inside and out. I think any time as a sport, you've got people leaving with a bad taste in their mouth, feeling that it's not about whether you won or lost, but actually what was potentially going to be a real knife-edge moment full of drama and suspense that got torn apart because of a rule is never really good for a sport. If it's in the rules, it's in the rules. You can't argue with that. I think the situation in terms of actually how it came about, it just wasn't great for people watching it. And I think actually, I might be wrong, but actually if the final over had been completed, there would have been another 6 runs.
Another 6 runs. Yeah, I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Yeah, so even though they hit the winning runs off the first or second ball of that over, it was irrelevant because even if we'd bowled a maiden, another six runs would have been applied at the end of the over.
Not if we got them out.
Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting. Mm.
And the irony is, I spoke to a friend of mine up in Shropshire, you had the irony. I spoke to a friend of mine in Shropshire about this, and he captains one of the sides in the Birmingham League Ossetry, and they were in basically the same position on Saturday with a penalty looming over them, which could well have cost them the game, and they got the wicket.
Interesting.
Got the wicket with two balls to spare. Yeah, otherwise they'd have lost the game if he'd have blocked it out, and it was win-lose cricket because the penalty runs would have come in. So I think the bottom line is this exists everywhere now, and I'm not sure everyone's aware of it, quite frankly, because it's pretty new in Middlesex. I mean, we need to make sure people are up to speed.
Well, you say that, Ben. I've played in a couple of games where the umpires have actually been keeping us up to date. So, you know, in my early years of playing for Twickenham in the Ones, the umpires were pretty vocal as to how many overs we needed to get in by a certain time. So I'd like to think they would have done the same thing on Saturday.
But the punishments were different, Huge. Punishments were different. Back then, you got a warning, and ultimately, then you would lose league points. And we lost one last year. If you look at the league table, we've been deducted a point, and that's for slow over eights. So the system's changed in the winter.
Okay, so now it's down to six runs, and obviously they've made an example in the first match of the season, I guess. So
that's a key point. Yeah, as long as it's consistently enforced, I guess. Obviously, just comparing it to the international world. And my understanding of the difference is that they go back and calculate and look at any delays of the game that take into account whether it's batsmen changing their gloves, socks, bat, helmet, or an injury, and tot up actually how much genuine time was lost as a result of the batting side rather than just the bowling side. Is it realistic that the umpires are doing that on the fly during that game? Are they able to say, okay, fine, they should have bowled their overs 15 minutes ago, but actually they've had drinks six times, or the guy's changed his gloves or his bat, or the ball went over a fence and got lost? How are they calculating that to say, okay, actually on reflection, there are mitigating factors, or is it just gut feel?
Well, the umpires in the Middlesex County League are supposed to take all of these stoppages into account. Now, quite what their method is, I don't know. But they're definitely supposed to take into account if the ball goes into, say, a construction site because you're building a new pavilion, which is what happened on Saturday at Bushy Park, or if batsmen, you know, a dilly-dallying, you know, chatting between the overs. They're supposed to take all of that into account. My issue with the international one, and I think that's a good point, is that they have 20 minutes longer. Why do we have 20 minutes shorter? So I find that very odd. And, of course, there's no penalty runs. Owen Morgan gets banned for a game. Now, I'm not saying that you should necessarily ban captains at club level, but so penalty runs aren't enforced in the international arena, but they are at the club level. It just feels a bit weird to me, no?
I suppose, well, thinking about that, there's no monetary value that they can fine us. Last year, they fined us a point. You know, I think, what did Morgan? Morgan was banned for a game and fined 40%.
Gets half his match fee or something.
Where from a club perspective, because this is not professional, you know, the only way to do it is by taking off runs. And if those are the rules, then I'm all for them. The one thing I would say is that it's all subjective. And my hope, and I wasn't there on Saturday, and I haven't spoken to anybody from Saturday, is my hope is that the umpires would have made it very clear with, you know, 10 overs to go, 5 overs to go, 3 overs to go, that, listen, you're about to get deducted runs, or the Teddington are about to have points, you know, runs added on if you don't get these overs in. Now, that for me is the way it should have been handled. Whether it was or not, I don't know. And again, like I said.
Yeah, it was huge. It was. I mean, the umpires, we're talking to our guys all the way through. I mean, bowling 20 plus wides didn't help.
Well, yeah, that's,
that's 4 overs extra that we bowled. And you know, speaking to those who were there at the end, and I saw about half of our innings, we weren't racing through it. We weren't deliberately going slow either, but, you know, it was dragging. So I'm totally with you guys. I think the rules are the rules, and, you know, you can't moan about them in terms of being applied, but I would moan about them in terms of the substance. And I think we need to think about this a little bit, because Kev's point right at the beginning is surely the key. Well, no one realised this was going to happen, and, you know, who was watching on the sidelines, until it did. And that's, I don't know if that's the right way to be deciding a game of cricket. It seems a bit unfortunate to me.
I agree with that.
Well, let's hope we've learned from it, and it doesn't happen again, I suppose. That's what you've got to do.
Absolutely. Having said that, you know, you can learn from these things and move on. And I think we looked at a pretty well-drilled outfit. I'm reasonably confident the Ones, if availability holds up, will be looking up rather than down come the end of the season. But
yeah, there were some really good performances. You know, There was, what, an 80, 85, an 83 not out, a 6 for all of new recruits, of which, you know, we could talk about now or later. I don't mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can talk about one, certainly. I'll come back to the 3s, 4s and 5s in a minute, but one of those guys who got 80 was Scott Newman.
Yeah, that's it.
New club coach, being around the club now for a few weeks, looking very much to work with work with teams, but also individuals on their games. And of course, he has got 16 first-class centuries to his name, so the boy can bat as well, and he will be playing with us on Saturday. So have you been chatting to Scott Hughes about his plans for the coming weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I unfortunately missed Nets tonight, but I spoke to a couple of the lads that were down there, and it was probably one of the better Nets that we've had. When I say that, there was a lot of organisation, so there was a lot of fielding, there was a lot of batting, there was plans. And obviously with the introduction of Pitch Vision, Scott now has the ability to review the footage of the weekend. And obviously the Twos played at home this weekend, so, you know, he had the ability to view the footage of the and was obviously training, because the Twos were training down on the green with the Ones. He was helping the guys out on the weekend and just, you know, giving them advice as to what they need to do to better their game. So yeah, I'm all for this. I think it's a fantastic addition. I think he's a fantastic addition. He's a great bloke too. You know, sort of had known him and been around him now for about 3 or 4 weeks, and yeah, I'm very optimistic about what he's going to bring to the club, not only this year but in years to come. And again, that's not just for the seniors, but also what he's going to be adding to our cult section.
Absolutely. And he's starting, I think, an academy this Friday, isn't
he? That's right, yeah, he is. First academy this Friday, so if you haven't, and you are listening to this and you haven't signed up for it, I definitely would get in touch with the club, and specifically Scott, to make sure that you get down on Friday.
Super, super. I mean, does he teach the leave alone shot, Hughes? This is the big question.
He does. He does. He makes sure that that elbow's nice and high when you leave it. There's the bat's nowhere near the ball. So yeah, if you need touching up, Dan, he's definitely available for one-on-one sessions.
Oh, rest assured, I think my leave alone has seen me good through the year, so mine's fine. I mean, it's others I'm worried about. It's the future of the club I'm thinking.
Did you just
of.
Say if you need touching up, he's available for a one-on-one session?
Let's go with a bit of context there. Yeah, that sounded a bit odd. I'll take that back.
The best.
Kev, I work full-time in education. I don't need to be saying that sort of stuff in a public forum.
Best podcast soundbite we've managed so far.
Fantastic.
Right. Okay, I've been done like a kipper there. Which, Kev, you got your Euros for your trip to Poland tomorrow. Are they all in?
This is the problem with running a podcast with a couple of absolute turncoats. You keep the...
Talk me through that, though. You got them, though, have you? Yeah.
Yeah. So look, obviously, I'm a bit too open and honest with my co podcasters, if that's even a word. So I'm off to sunny Poland tomorrow for a wedding, Having just packed and messaged a few people I'm going with, asked them how many Euros they've got out. Apparently they don't even use Euros there, so I've got to go and find some zloty somewhere in the world. But I'm glad it's amusing you both.
Kev, we love you for it, and I should probably admit I've done it before, 15 years ago, exactly the same sort of thing. So you're not alone, you're in good company.
It does mean I'm missing Saturday, which is a shame.
Yeah, get on to Saturday in a moment, but 3s, 4s, 5s, just very quickly. Yeah. The 4s had a good win, and they have already won this weekend because poor old Ealing 5s have cried off. So the 4s are basically played 2-1-2, already in a pretty decent place to go forward. Did you catch anything of their victory at the weekend? Anything we need to know?
I must admit, I didn't. I haven't seen it. I did have a look for the scorecard because I was looking to publish the team of the week, but it hadn't been put up yet, so I'm still waiting for the scorecard. But I heard that Rajdeep Chowdhury scored a good 51, yeah, which is important, and I heard Praveen took a 4 for
Serebadina.
I heard he took a 4 for, right. So two very good performances from those two guys, but unfortunately I don't know what the rest of the guys did.
No, that's absolutely awesome. They both did really well. Neil Tomar got a match report to me at 1:52 in the morning, so goodness knows what Neil, on Sunday morning I should say, so we had that up on the site very early. But it sounds to me, if the 4s get there, you know, get their sort of availability act together, they got some wily old souls in there, people like Sarwan Singh, mm-hmm, Colin Blunden may be around. I mean, I think Phil Walker played this weekend as well. So they've got, you know, the core of a side that can do pretty well, I think, you know, with or without Ealing crying off. So good on them. We'll have to get Hinay Dasani on the podcast, the fourth team captain. Yeah, he always has a story to tell, so that's good. Not quite so positive for the threes and fives. Now, I don't know too much about the threes. I know they struggled. They batted first and scored 130. And then Ealing threes got them quite quickly. But the fives gallantly went to over to Harrow with nine men, right?
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Poor old souls. Chris Wild tells me that it was a game of firsts. First time he'd ever captained a side. First time a side that he'd been involved in never got less than 50. And first time he'd ever played in a game with nine men on his team. So things can only get better for Chris. And of course, I think they will, given that the fourth team game is off this weekend. What do you expect out of week two, guys? Where are the twos? You just talk us through what you're expecting.
We are away to Harrow St Mary's. We're looking fairly good this week. We've got a new recruit that's just come in, a guy by the name of Lewis, which is good. It looks to be a decent bat and a decent bowler. So, you know, the club's always recruiting. When I say always, it's week two and we've managed to find somebody and pick somebody up. So, yeah, it's good. And then we got a pretty core side again. So Ethan Wright's back. We've obviously got the stalwarts of Knuckle Vishwanath. We've got Josh opening up and keeping for us again. We have Kit Wilson coming. He was away last weekend, so he's coming back too. Also a new recruit. So yeah, we're hopeful of a good showing this weekend.
Super. And the ones are playing the return fixture, right? They've got Harrison Mares on the green.
They do. Yep.
Yeah, newly promoted. I find Harrison Mares is quite a tough side to call. They'll have some good players, you know they've got Ravi Patel playing for them now. So I think the ones will be. They'll need to be on their mettle to get their first win of the season.
Yeah. I might have this wrong, but I think they also have their Middlesex player playing this weekend because he needs to get some overs under his belt.
I think that may be right, yeah. No, I think they'll be a tough nut to crack.
Yeah,
and, you know, we'll need to be on our game there. And Kev, of course, me and you will be able to follow from afar via Pitch Vision, so, as will everybody else.
Absolutely. I'll be finding
that's been a great addition.
Some Wi-Fi.
That's been an absolutely great addition.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I mean, I found myself watching St Mary's College on Wednesday, who, of course, play their home games at Twickenham CC. They were playing Royal Holloway. And I found myself watching that game for no other reason than I could. I mean, it was just have it on the computer, on the background. And I think it's, you know, it's truly, truly fantastic. Moving away from the local scene, the World Cup's around the corner, folks. It feels like it's getting closer by the day. England are playing the last round of their warm-up games against Pakistan. Any thoughts on whether this is going to be the year? Is it coming home?
Everyone is saying that, right? Kev, what do you think? I just, you know, we're going back to what your predictions are. I'm interested in your prediction on this.
He sold you there, Kev. Okay.
Well, that's been the theme of this so far. yeah, look, I mean... It's so quintessentially English, isn't it, to get a bit of hope going and then always, you know, we start singing it's coming home. You've got to think there's some pretty decent signs, though. You know, the consistency that we've shown in terms of how we've been playing one day cricket, the power and depth of that batting lineup on home ground with a bit of control about the pitches and what they're going to do. You've got to think we're going to be there or thereabouts, but...
That batting lineup, it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
It keeps coming at you, doesn't it?
I mean, it reminds me of I saw Kevin Peterson made this comment on Twitter that it's like the Australian side of the 90s. You know, if Hayden doesn't get you, then Pontin will. And if he doesn't, then you've got Steve Waugh or Gilchrist, you know. And it's like they just never stop. Yeah. And there's something of that in that batting lineup.
Yeah, I saw that.
The one thing I will say is they go so hard, they're either going to score 400 or nothing. And I said that in maybe, you know, episode two of the podcast, is that's the one thing that I don't fear, you know, it's tough to watch because they go so hard at it and it's fearless cricket, which is right. But, you know, when they get it right, it looks unbelievable as they did on, you know, the last game when they chased down 357 or whatever it was in 45 overs, not even like with a couple of balls to spare, five overs. But then there was the other end of the spectrum that happened earlier in the year when they were bowled out for, I don't forget what it was now, less than 100, I think it was, or whatever. So, you know, cricket's a funny game on their day. Anybody can win. The one thing I will say is just being a little bit patriotic here is the IPL's just finished. And the two top wicket takers in the IPL are both playing for South Africa. So I have to feel a little bit positive in that KG Rabada.
How long did it take you to dig up that stat, Yuge? I mean, I'm impressed with that. I like that a lot. I didn't know that. But my goodness. Okay, so South Africa. Well, you know, South Africa, you know, they got England first up, haven't
they? They do,
so,
yeah. Well, they've got a bye, as you said. So.
I wasn't going to say that. But now you mentioned
it. Yeah, exactly. you know, it was interesting watching it because David Warner, top run scorer in the IPL, and he didn't even play all the games. But then, yeah, I mean, the only reason I came across the stat was because, you know, Rabada was leading it. He's now got a small back niggle, so he went home early, so he didn't even play all the games. But then in the final, Imran Tahir overtook him in with his 2 wickets that he picked up, you know, picking up, I think, 26 wickets. Mm. So, yeah, I mean...
That's interesting. Tahir is one of those bowlers, isn't he? He's a je ne sais quoi, but you don't know what you're going to get, but if he gets it right, he's hard
work.
Yeah,
yeah. I always wonder in this day and age, I mean, you know, we often talk about it in club cricket, is that, you know, batters get you promoted, but bowlers keep you up.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, what I'm interested in to see in this World Cup is to see how the bowlers will fare. Because if we can get some, you know, decent bowling performances from, you know, I'm talking about all the countries here, then, you know, hopefully we'll see some good cricket instead of this, you know, I know you call this a lot, Dan, instead of this baseball that we keep watching people play with just them smashing it all over.
Well, I mean, talking to X Factor bowlers, I mean, and I totally buy what you're saying. And then, of course, England have got one sort of on the radar in Jofra Archer. He's not quite been picked yet. Do you think he will be, Kev? What's your take on Archer? Is he coming in at some point?
I think, it's easy to say in hindsight, I think he always would have come in. I think if I was in a selector's shoes, I could see exactly what they've done, which is let him prove himself with all this media scrutiny against in the Pakistan series, and then it's much easier to parachute him into the provisional squad just before the tournament. If you name him in that squad and drop out one of the guys that's slogged it, you know, for years to get into that squad, whether it's Wood or Plunkett, and then Archer flops in Pakistan series, you're going back cap in hand to one of your guys and saying, "We're sorry, we thought he was going to be better. Do you fancy coming back in?" It'd be the same as what England did with. Was it Burgess, wasn't it? When they brought him in as a centre, and then they were damned if they did, damned if they didn't. So,
yeah, the rugby side, yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, Sam Burgess, yeah,
exactly.
To be honest, I can totally relate to that. Just as a captain of a club side, you know, I never want to drop somebody until I 100% know I'm going to have to drop them. You know, because I don't have to ring them on Friday and call them back in. You know, it's the logic's it travels, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I will say one thing, though. In the warm-up games that he's been playing, or the pre-games that he's been playing against Pakistan, I've noticed a massive difference in the scores when he played and when he didn't play. I think in the first couple of games, the scores were, you know, 200. He didn't play last week or in the last game, and they scored 357. You know, I'm not saying that was down to him, but I think he just brings that X factor. I think there's that old adage saying that, you know, money can't buy you pace, and he's just got absolute raw pace.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been the weakness that's been laid at England's doorstep, is that seam attack, especially if Willie's not playing and giving you a bit of left-arm variation, it's really samey. They all bowl within a couple of miles of each other in terms of pace, and that we need someone like that can come in. Mark Wood's filled that to a degree, but can he get his way through an entire tournament? He's a little bit fragile. It has to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Woody is. Yeah, sorry, I thought you meant Archer there for a second.
No, as it Mark Wood, you've got to say, is probably the only person that's really competing with off Archer as that person that can, you know, blow a side away with just pure wheels. Whereas the others offer a bit of variation, whether it's Plunkett with his height, Willie with his seamer, and then you've got Tom Curran.
With left arm as well.
Yeah, exactly. Really? And then, you know, Tom Curran's got a bit more death bowling variation, and he had an incredible IPA, IPL. He was in the winning
IPA. You can take the man at the bar. We can't take the bar at the man.
Yeah. You know what? It does bring something to mind that happened for us on the weekend. I mean, you know, Ishi Sohi, one of our new recruits that has come in. Yeah. You know, he took 6 wickets for us and almost won us the game this weekend, including a hat-trick. I mean, that has to be a shout-out. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, that's just pure pace for you. That's the sort of thing that pace does. It can just, you know, it can just swing a game for you, you know, out of nowhere. I think they were cruising. I think I read the match report. They needed 32 off 7 overs with 7 wickets in hand, and he almost won us the game. So, yeah, you know, I think there's a place in cricket for somebody that's just got raw pace.
Yeah. Well, it's just good to see the bowlers coming back. You know, a stuck record that I am, I do think this is a heavily batsman-friendly form of the game. And to have somebody like Archer who can really mix it up, you know, it's got to be good for cricket, really. So, and I do think ultimately you've got to pick your best team. I mean, I get all the sympathy votes and all that stuff, but when push comes to shove, if you want to win the World Cup, pick your best 11 players. And Archer is eligible. So for me, he's got to play. But I appreciate that Kev's point. It might take a little bit of diplomacy to get there, but I think it would be a poor call if he didn't end up playing, you know, against South Africa in 2 or 3 weeks' time.
I would be amazed if he's not in every single side that we put out of that World Cup. You know, we haven't even discussed the fact that he can hit a seriously long ball. He's incredible in the field. He's just an all-round X-factor player.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question on the World Cups. We can always come back to this, of course, as the tournament starts to pan out. Outsiders, there's always an outsider who does well somewhere along the line. I'm just going to throw it out there that Pakistan have got something. Now, admittedly, England, you know, have done pretty well against them in the last week, but haven't dominated them really. And I always fancy Pakistan as a tournament team, but that may just be. That may be miles off. And any thought? West Indies, maybe? Who are the outsider teams, other than England and India, who we should be keeping an eye on? I mean, South Africa, huge? What's the feeling in SA? Yeah. Do you think you've got a good chance here?
I don't know what the feeling is in SA. I'm fairly hopeful that we'll make the playoffs. But if I have to, you know, pin my hat on an outsider team, I can't look further than the West Indies. They are just looking, you know, looking at match winners that they have. People like Andre Russell, who was, you know, player of the tournament in the IPL, the way he won games with, you know, that shouldn't have been won single-handedly. And you start putting that into context with some of the other players that the West Indies side has. Again, understand cricket's a game on the day and you can either win or lose and, you know, whatever the case is. But I think West Indies have got a great shout at getting to the playoffs and then, you know, going into knockout cricket.
Cool. Kev, any thoughts?
I'm going to probably jump on the burger train on that, I'm afraid, yeah. I think West Indies have just got some really exciting talent. If you look, yeah, Pollard and Russell look back to their best. Narine has somehow become a leg-spinning opening batsman. And then, yeah, the likes of Hetmyer, Cottrell, all these new guys coming through. Plus, you know, they rise to the occasion. I think they're quite interesting.
You know what I loved about this? We haven't even mentioned Gale. That's how good the West Indies side has become.
That's a good point. I mean, he did okay against England, didn't he?
He did do okay, Kev. Yeah. He did do okay. Yeah, he did. Good stuff, chaps. Last sort of couple of points for you to mull over. We, of course, have had a few things going on at the club between now and the last podcast. Some of them sound really mundane. I'm going to mention them anyway. We've had a new kitchen, which of course doesn't sound rock and roll, but I think it's brilliant. I think it's a great acquisition. Have you had a good look?
I used it this weekend. Yeah, I had my tea there, so yeah, it was good.
We've had a good cook. We put some bouri in there. It was too cold to braai, so we chucked some bouri in the oven.
Fantastic. Well, Paul Johnson deserves a big heads up there for getting a grant to bankroll that. You know,
yeah, really good.
Jono done us all proud there by picking that one up. We also had the quiz, the annual TCC quiz a couple of weeks ago. Good evening. Yuge made a massive contribution to making that work by cooking a monstrously good braai, but I thought it was a good do.
Yeah, it was good. What was it? Probably close to 50 people at the club, you know, on that evening. You know, obviously the ladies put together a really good show, as they always do when it comes to the quiz night. Yeah, the food was enjoyable. Obviously, we had the meat room come around and provide us a whole bunch of meat, which we cooked up and served us some salads. So we're not just meat eaters. We did also have some vegetables and greens that went with it.
The veggie burgers were very nice, Eugene. I had one myself. Yeah. They were very nice.
And then obviously, you know, I think the participation that we had, you know, as many people in the club that we had on that evening was fantastic. So, you know, as much as the organization, you know, takes a little bit getting round, it's also... it's down to the people in the club, and you know, I thought it was a really good show. But I think it was really
tough quiz to win as well.
You know what, Dan? I was about to big up you there, but I'm not going to say anything now. Kev, do you know who
you don't
won?
Need to big up.
I've heard it mentioned a couple of times.
Yeah, we'll move on, guys. We'll move on. A bit more downbeat. I don't want to finish on this, but a bit more downbeat. We have had our problems as well. We seem to have been targeted by a number of hoodlums, to be honest, and the club has been broken into a couple of times. which is almost unheard of. I can't really recall that happening at all, but they forced open the door on two successive nights, and I was almost dreading getting up in the morning on the third day to hear that they had another go. But we've since got CCTV in use. We've taken measures to secure the place, and we're pretty confident we got this under control, right?
Yeah, we're there now. So indoor CCTV, outdoor CCTV, you know, we're now watching legally, obviously, within our legal rights. So, yeah, I mean, obviously with the break-ins, I mean, you know, when somebody comes in and kicks your front door in, you sort of stand up and take notice. So, yeah, we've had to, you know, replace the door. We've put some more locks on it now. So we've tried to lock it up as much as we can. But, you know, more importantly, we can now see what's going on at the club in case something is happening during those funny hours of the evening when people get up to mischief.
Yeah, and just encourage everybody, if you're walking past the green, just have a look, make sure that the place looks secure. And if it doesn't, then let one of us know, or let John know, or one of the officers of the club know, because, you know, we can't be having hoodlums like that damaging the club in the way that they were threatening to a couple of weeks ago. And I'd say almost unheard of. I mean, we're a very public club on Twickenham Green, but we've always been pretty secure. So to be targeted like that was a bit dispiriting, really. Mm. On a much more positive note, the last thing I wanted to flag up, Kev, Fantasy League.
Yeah, we're all good.
You've got a bit of form in this department, if I remember rightly, right? We have the Fantasy League launching on Saturday.
Yeah.
Now, talk me through one last year, Kev. Who won last year?
I absolutely smashed everyone.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. Good man. Good man. Are you in this year?
We're talking hundreds of points. I am. And, yeah, it's all been set up. Again, a lot of credit there goes to you. Obviously, one of the byproducts of having a really good year in terms of new recruits is we've got to add in a load of new people, reclassify them, set it all up. And it sounds like, it looks like quite a few teams have been added. So that's all set up. So this will be the first point scoring week. I think the plan is to be a little bit more proactive this year in terms of adjustments of pricing on people, just to try and keep it a bit more even. But yeah, it's a great way of trying to get everyone involved in the club. And if there is anyone that is playing and doesn't see their name on there, give us a shout. But yeah, it'd be something that would be good to start adding into this podcast, a quick review as to how everyone's going.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And you underplayed that a bit, Kev. You did storm it last year, because at one stage, I think my team was second for a while, but we were miles away. You definitely had, you were thinking through what you were doing and you picked the best team.
There was a little bit of luck over judgment, I think. I triple-captained Jay Buller on the week where he got 150 not out, 5 wickets, and took 3 catches.
Against Hampstead.
Exactly. And I think I broke the website as it tried to calculate what he did that weekend. It was an incredible performance from him. And I think that to an extent killed it a little bit. Incredible performance that day from him.
As Napoleon once said, it's better to be lucky than good. And I think he had a point.
Did he have one leg?
That was Nelson.
Oh, just checking.
Yeah. Yes. All good. Thanks for putting that together, mate. I think the Fantasy League looks brilliant. I would really encourage people to get involved. I haven't picked my team yet, but I certainly will tomorrow. It's a great way of following what all the sides are doing. And, fantastic sort of discussion point in the bar at night. Any last words, guys? Anything you want to throw in before we end?
Yeah, I suppose one more thing for me. You forgot to mention our new covers, Dan. It's not often we get to look at some fantastic new covers on the green.
Those covers are things of beauty, Yush. They are fantastic. Do you want to talk us through how much we pay for them as well?
Well, yeah, fortunately, again, Jono did a fantastic job and found another grant for it. So, yeah, I think the total cost of the covers was something around £4,500. But I think we paid £480 of our own.
Absolutely
money.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Jono's done a great work in finding all these grants and getting the money in that we needed. So, yeah, all for the good of the club.
Those covers are brilliant, even though I did think your attempts as a second 11 to put them on Saturday was sort of a bit Keystone Cops. Oh. But I mean, I'm sure we can put that right. I'm sure we can put that. But they are brilliant. Fantastic. Kev, any last thoughts?
No. I think good luck to everyone on Saturday, I'd say.
Good stuff. Fellas, always a pleasure, never a chore. Have a good weekend in Poland, Kev. It's a great place. I'm sure you'll love it. And we'll reconvene as soon as we can.
That's good. Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers, fellas.
Bye.